And I've had to say a couple times that it seems like not only that theme sort of took on a whole new meaning ever since then, but even the specific themes that I was thinking about for a given week, or the specific examples of being off the beaten path on a given week, suddenly had this whole new context that I didn't even anticipate when I was first thinking about it. And that's true again this week, actually. See, right now, we would normally be expecting, many of us, with a lot of anticipation, the beginning of football season, and OSU football in particular, which is so important here in Central Ohio. And unfortunately, right, we've seen the Big Ten Conference cancel the football season, at least for the fall, and they're still scrambling around for lots of different plans for how that might actually work. But that's something that, while I'm going to go into some things about sports and how we can learn from faith with that in the sermon today, right, it's not just saying, ooh, we're excited because something's about to start, maybe we can find some meaning. It's that we're also having this experience of mourning and disappointment, probably a lot of us. Or otherwise, some of us that are less into it might be thinking, why is this such a big deal? Why are these things so meaningful that it would be so impactful for some people to see that things are not coming through like an OSU football season? And the thing is, that I actually encourage that feeling of mourning and disappointment if it's really important to you. And we'll talk some more about why it is that that might be so meaningful to a lot of people. Because I think that with the cancellation of something like a football season, the mourning is not just that we're not going to see games and touchdowns and tackles, but there's a whole lot of extra stuff around sports that binds our community together, that helps us find meaning and examples of things that are important in our lives that we can learn lessons from, and we mourn the inability to share in that in as big a deal when a season is lost this year. And that probably reminds a lot of us not only of what we're thinking about with the football season, but we've probably had many of those same feelings in reacting to not being able to participate in church in the way that we are most used to. The things that we miss are not just the hour in the morning, the specific activities, but also all of the things around it that help us bond together as people, that help us learn lessons about our lives, and then give us energy and motivation and inspiration to go out and live those lessons in the rest of our lives. And when we're in a trying time, not having some of that motivation or boost of inspiration from some of those activities can make it harder to feel like we're able to persevere through a challenging time. And so whether you're a big OSU sports fan and so you're like, yes, I know exactly how this feels, and it does kind of relate to church. Or maybe you're more connecting with the feelings of church and you're wondering, why would somebody put that same type of meaning and feeling to something like football, which doesn't seem as important to me? Hopefully this sermon and thinking about ways that I have seen as a sports fan myself, actually things that have really formed my faith, really made me think, really made me develop a new perspective on how I can connect with God and other people who are brothers and sisters in Christ, can be something that we can take some interesting inspiration and encouragement from, especially as we're continuing to mourn some losses of things that in the pandemic, in the strife of today, that we're not being able to do the way that we normally like. But also we're starting to see some turns, and as I mentioned, we'll be back in the courtyard starting next week for services, and there will be other things that are continuing to come back and feel a little bit more normal, but can we keep giving them the full meaning that we possibly can rather than taking them for granted, since we're coming back to them after realizing how important they were to us? The first time that I really noticed a really deep connection between sports and fan culture and what things are like in the church was when I moved away to Tallahassee, Florida, from growing up here in Central Ohio, to go to college at Florida State University. Because there was a whole special process that I needed to be enculturated and, you might say, indoctrinated into being part of the campus community there when I moved there. See, I hadn't realized how much being in Central Ohio made me sort of a natural Ohio State fan. And the types of things that I knew but took for granted where that knowledge came from and what it's like to form that up in a particular person when they're trying to fit into a community. My main sport was soccer, and I played that a lot growing up. And so I, you know, rooted for the Buckeyes in general, but I didn't feel like, compared to a lot of the people I knew, I felt like I was kind of a, you know, just a casual fan or somebody that floated in and out and it wasn't as big a deal to me as it seemed to be for some people. So I thought, oh, I'll just go to, you know, Florida State, and I can still follow OSU if I want to watch football, but I can also take on this team, and it'll be really easy to fit into things. But as I went to games and realized I really didn't know very much at all about Florida State, except they had, like, gold helmets, and they were the Seminoles, and they had some really good teams in the 90s right before I went to college in the year 2000, I didn't know a lot about what it meant to be a fan. So I had to be taught all of these special rituals and chants and celebrations and traditions that were a part of really becoming rooted in the Florida State community and bonding with other students who were fans with me. And so, you know, one of the really big ones is at the end of every touchdown. Feels a little silly and self-conscious, but maybe I should do it anyway. They had to teach me the right rhythm and cadence and everything to say F-L-O-R-I-D-A. S-T-A-T-E, Florida State, Florida State, Florida State, woo, right? It's silly, but when you have an entire stadium of people doing that, you don't feel quite as self-conscious as I did just now, even in an empty sanctuary. And there's a whole lot of other things that went into learning to be a fan and learning to be part of a campus community there at Florida State. There's all the other fight songs, all the traditions of when you go to the game and what you wear and how you act. And one of the things that was fascinating to me is as I was trying to learn that on Saturdays, at the same time I was moving and looking for a church to become a part of on Sundays. And man, there's a lot of parallels between fitting in at a football stadium and fitting in at a church, more than maybe we would sometimes realize, right? Different churches have things where you have to learn the right time to stand up and the right time to sit down. And you don't want to get it wrong because you're used to it working some way at another church that you've been to. Different churches have their songs that are most popular, and then songs that you aren't going to hear a lot at a different church. Some churches and some schools, right, have disagreements about what type of band you should have, right? OSU's not going to allow any woodwinds in their marching band, and a lot of other schools do, just like different churches have things about what instruments or styles of music that they want to have as part of their expressions. And then even the right things to say. In different churches, whether it's something as simple as the Lord's Prayer, whether you say trespasses or sins or debts, or there's whole other doctrinal disputes or things like that, that you can realize some things help you fit in and some things make you stick out. And it was from that realization of how much of things that we have in our life we can take for granted. I didn't really think about the ways that I knew the words to Hang on Sloopy when I grew up in Columbus, or knew the words to Carmen, Ohio, or knew some of the great players of OSU's history. I didn't think of, like, oh, I have to sit down and actually study this in a particular way to then show someone else that this is all the stuff that I know to be a good fan. You just sort of absorb it. And the things that we take for granted, the things that feel normal to us that we start with, we often get a whole new perspective on what they mean when we have to go and try something similar, right? It's also traditions. It's just in a different community, a different context. And suddenly that takes on a whole new meaning. And it makes us rethink, how do I learn those things? Why are they important to me? What ultimate meaning should they have? How much should I hold on to them? And it was in that, because especially as it came to church, I had a big thing, and some of you have heard this before too, about the tension between faith being about religion versus about being relationship with God. And I was a part of a church community that in particular would talk a lot about, we really got to focus on relationship with God. And sometimes religion actually just gets in the way. And I'm really thankful for having that sense of comparison between faith and college football fandom, as strange as it sounds, because it helped me realize that in a lot of ways, that's a false choice and a false division. Just like with sports, we don't say that being a fan is only about enjoying athletics or only about participating in rituals and traditions and wearing the team colors and knowing the songs and gathering together for watching games on TV or tailgating before a game or whatever it might be. All of those things are part of the experience. I realized that relationship with God and religion, all of the traditions we have, all of the things that we do as rituals, as practices, as sacraments that help bind us together as a community, all that extra stuff really is just as important to have that full sense of faith where I'm part of a community, I'm learning lessons that are really important, and I'm taking themes and hopefully really wanting to live them out in the truest, fullest ways with the support of other people and not taking them for granted. And appreciating religion and relationship, the culture that we build around something, even though sometimes it's really hard to learn, like it was for me at Florida State, I think is really important. But I do have to say that while I saw some positives in that, Florida State also gave me the opportunity to see that there's sort of a dark side or something to watch out for when we get into this idea of rituals being really important, of things that we do to enculturate people, to make them feel like they have to belong, and how some of those things can be really good and some of those things can be a little bit tricky. Around the same time that I was going to Florida State, there was a movement of schools changing mascots. Here in Ohio, maybe the most famous one you might be aware of is that Miami University changed their mascot from the Redskins, which we know is also needing to be changed right now for the Washington football team, out of recognition of what that means for indigenous people here in the U.S., to the Red Hawks, right? And my brother was going to enroll a couple years after me in Capital University when he started college. You may or may not know this, but they have a background of being called the Crusaders as their mascot. And they've thought about changing it a lot recently because of some of the weird meaning of Crusaders and being militaristic about faith and conquering other countries. But before that, even, they had to change it from Fightin' Lutherans. And I thought that was hilarious that Capital used to be called the Fightin' Lutherans because they're a Lutheran school. But they went through, I learned about that, and they were thinking about changing from Crusaders again. And so we know that there are those things that hang out there for what do any of our traditions mean, not only to the existing fans who may have different feelings about it, but then also to the other people who are part of the larger community and how we impact. And obviously, you might guess, Florida State, their mascot is the Seminoles. And so, especially with it being tied to indigenous people, that had a whole another potential meaning. And the thing is, for Florida State, I actually appreciated that they felt like they tried pretty hard to do things that were in partnership, in consideration, with a more deeply valued meaning about what Seminoles was. They have a partnership with the Seminole tribe in Florida. The person who serves as the mascot, who rides the horse into the stadium and sort of looks like a more, 19th century lifestyle dress and things of a Seminole Indian, has to have some descendancy from the Seminole tribe in order to be able to be eligible to be that person. The Seminole tribe gets money from the school for all of their licensing for athletic things. So while I'll admit me and some other people I knew felt a little bit strange about it compared to some of the things that are out there, I felt like they were trying to show some sense of connection, some sense of partnership, some sense of respect where they could. Although Florida State also had done a lot of the tomahawk chop cheer, which I think is one of those that maybe is a little bit more potentially disrespectful for people who actually are of that culture and know that there's a lot more fullness to their culture than just a stereotype like that. And so I saw how things that can be taken as really cherished traditions and symbols can sometimes not be super easy as completely positive. We have to look a little bit more deeply at them and think, what is the ultimate value that we're trying to embody? And I appreciated that Florida State in many ways tried to think that out, but recognized also the difficulty of that. That came into even further clarity for me as I began to follow European soccer more, as you were able to do that on TV. I love soccer. I wanted to watch some of the best teams. And so as you were able to watch games in England and Europe, as TV contracts and cable and everything got a little bit better, I wanted to pick a team to follow from the English Premier League. And I ended up picking a team called Tottenham Hotspur, which is, you know, great, wonderful British word to begin with. But one of the things that stood out to me that I thought was really interesting as I was learning about them and some of their traditions was that they had this really weird thing of wanting to call themselves, and I'll give a warning that this is a word that has potentially very bad meaning for some people. I'm going to explain why this is important to people in Tottenham, why there might be some positives to it, but also why we have to think carefully about it. But I just do want to give a heads up that they called their fans and even their favorite players, they called them Yids, which we know is often used as a not very good word for people who are Jewish. I wondered, at first that turned me off to it completely, like, what the heck? Why would they possibly do that? And then I learned the background, and I found it really fascinating that the value behind it actually meant a lot to me, and I knew meant a lot to their fans as well. Tottenham is located in, it's a neighborhood in the north part of London, where historically a lot of Jewish people have settled, and in particular people who are very noticeably physically Jewish. So people who are Orthodox and, you know, wear the wide-brim hats and have curls on their temples and all of those types of things. And so it's very noticeable, and they often would get bullied, picked on, oppressed by other people from around London. And so Tottenham fans, though, took on the people in their neighborhood and had folks that were of all of those different Jewish and then also Gentile backgrounds, all part of their fan groups, and they felt like they had a bond together. But you may know that in Europe there's a lot of chants around soccer games in particular, and some of them can get really, really nasty. And there were times where there's basically hateful things about wanting Jews in particular to be killed that other fans would chant at the Tottenham fans, and they would use that word as a slur. They'd call them Yids, intending to basically dehumanize all of the people who were Jewish that were associated with the club. And so Tottenham fans decided that what they were going to do is, rather than let other people use that word as a slur against some of their fans and sort of divide them up like that, that they're going to show unity and show solidarity and support for those people who might be most treated badly amongst their fan group, and say, we don't care, you can't hurt them, because we say that they're part of us and we're just like them, and we're going to take that as a badge of honor. And you can't shame them because of who they are, because we're glad that they're with us and we're with them, and no matter what you say bad about them, we'll just say that's us too, because we care more about our connection with all of our fellow fans than we care about you trying to make some of them look bad. And I thought that was an amazing value that the Tottenham fans lifted up. And so that was something that actually made it appeal to me. But over the years, as some things around soccer have developed, and so they don't really allow a lot of those nasty chants and things like that, this is now sometimes 20, 30, 40 years old, where that type of behavior was really symbolic of solidarity. And now, not just sort of strange that you're using a slur and saying that it has this really positive value. And so I'm watching now, as I continue to be a fan of this team, that their fans are saying, does it still have that same meaning? We want to say that we're inclusive of everyone. We want to say that no one who's a part of our team should be shamed. But does using that word still consistently still hold that meaning? Maybe it was powerful at one point when people were being really bad, but now does it look like we're just keeping the word in use when other people are trying to get rid of it because of its negative meaning in lots of other cultural contexts? And they're struggling with what that means, and I really appreciate that idea of trying to find the best meaning of the value in sports fandom. I think that that's really amazing. See, there is something really, really positive in rituals, as I said, even and especially within religion. We see this in particular in our passage in Exodus today, where God said, God kept vigil over the Israelites and brought them out of slavery and out of Egypt and on the path towards having their own land, their own country, their own people. And so just as God kept vigil to remember that, to remember the freedom that God brings, people who are Jewish celebrate the Passover every year on that same night and tell the story over and over again to each other, to their children, to make sure that that value, that identity of God, is anchored in who they are as a people, not only ethnically, but also as people of faith. And those are the types of things that I think the best of our religion always strives for. How do we lift up the best values of who God is, how God calls us to be in the world, to be people of service, to be people of sacrifice, to be people of love and grace, to be people of justice that help the world be transformed just like God's kingdom would desire to be. And sometimes it does take those things that maybe we get used to them and they feel rote after we do them years and years and years and years. And maybe there's, you know, some people that we know, like if you have neighbors or friends or family members who are Jewish and celebrate Passover, they're like, yeah, sometimes sitting at the Seder year after year, especially when I'm a kid, I just kind of sit there and get bored and kind of like look around and check my watch and want to get on my video games. We might in the pews with certain rituals, like the Lord's Prayer or something else, sometimes take it for granted. But having something that anchors us together, that we know always brings us back, and that focuses us over and over again on the most important values, I think is a really beautiful part of religion, and that we can see is echoed in other parts of society, that it can be so important. Hopefully that helps us value that in religion again some more. And this ultimately begs a question, especially when we look at things with faith and sports in comparison. Right? Who really owns the identity of a particular group? With sports, we have that tension of, is it the players on the field, right? Sometimes they'll say, you know, you're not actually a player, but you're wearing a jersey and saying us and we all the time when you talk about them, and that's just ridiculous. And especially, I think, in college sports, we think of people being Buckeyes for life when they've graduated from OSU and played there. In professional sports, though, we know that actually it's a little bit more complicated than that, because players come for maybe only parts of their career, and a fan who will be a fan of a team for years and years and years and pass it on to their kids will often watch a player be a favorite player for their team for a certain part of their career, but then also at another time go to a different team and play for that team and maybe even be a rival. And I think in Ohio we know that really well with someone like LeBron James, right, starting in Cleveland and going to Miami and coming back and now going to L.A. We know what it's like, and how do we decide what belonging means and how you live into that community. I think lots of people, whatever you think your role within a particular community, within for us as people of faith, being Christians, we should not think about those divisions. If there's some special people who really do it, and there's other people who are just supposed to tag along, that all of us help follow those values that God gives us and embody them and live them out and make them real in what we try to do, not only in how we remind ourselves of them within church and in worship and in our rituals, but also in what we do out in the world, in our lives, in our interactions with other people. There's a really powerful story, again, going back to the Exodus, that helps me think of why this is so important. I was listening to a podcast a few months ago with a professor named Alan Levinovitz, and he told a story of why he keeps a $2 Confederate bill in his wallet with him at all times. He's a Jewish man. The person on the $2 Confederate bill is Judah Benjamin. He's the only Jewish person who's ever been on any type of American or Confederate money. Very unique distinction. And Alan Levinovitz carries this in his wallet because he said, this man celebrated Passover just like I do, and also owned slaves, and also fought a war to help other people own slaves. In fact, when he celebrated Passover, he probably had his slaves bringing him the food and washing his dishes. While he was celebrating and lifting up for himself and for his children, God is a God who frees the slaves. God is a God who sees the suffering of people who are on the outside and comes to them and frees them and gives them new possibility and new life and new agency and new strength in him. And he thought it was so strange that how could somebody who did that ritual, who had that value, could on the other hand not extend that same thought and application and value to other people even immediately around him, even to the point of making his own slaves, even to the point of fighting and killing other people in order to keep slaves, while celebrating Passover and how God freed them. We can all be prone to those moments where the ritual just becomes empty and we forget what the deepest meaning is. And we need to always try to come back to that and recognize where we might be missing things and just saying the words or doing the motions, listening to the songs, whatever it might be. And it's more about we say, well, I'm following those patterns, and so that means that I'm okay. I'm claiming an identity as part of the tribe, and so everything's okay. And it's good that we are bonded together as special groups, even if that sometimes makes us different from people around us. But it's really important we don't lose that. And even in the story of Exodus, we see that as the tribe was being bonded together and pulled out of slavery, God also says that other Egyptians gave them supplies for their journey. That people who were not Israelites, who were also oppressed by the Egyptians, went out as part of their number and joined them in the desert. It's right there in those verses that we saw today. So even as we have that bonding as a tribe, we have to remember that there's a call from God to be mindful of those other people that we're witnesses to. And in 1 Timothy, we see Paul, I think, reminding people in particular that faith is not always easy. that sometimes we do get into the rhythms, do get into the things that are ruts and we can take for granted, but that we're encouraged to strive, to struggle like with physical training, to seek godliness in all that we do. I think embodying those values that are reminded to us in our rituals and in our religion, so that it goes out not just about what we come here and do and show that we're a part of on a Sunday and check off the boxes, but that we're living the ultimate, deepest meaning of those values as we go out into our life of faith. It's easy, again, to think players and fans are split in sports for who's supposed to be doing things. And sometimes we might think, too, well, like, we can tell people either, you know, go and be super involved and do all the ministries and show that you're part of the tribe by being really busy, or you're just like a fan who sits on the sideline and doesn't do anything and is lazy and passive and whatever. That's actually not what I'm trying to talk about in bringing these thoughts to us in Finding Faith Off the Beaten Path and connecting religion and faith and sports. I actually do think, like I said, that ultimately the whole point of sports, and we know with sports being canceled, with some sports taking breaks or doing boycotts, that idea of what is the ultimate meaning of sports is right there in our faces right now. Is it just about an escape? Is it just about being entertained? Is it just about having people do amazing things that we can't for our benefit and not seeing them as people and the other thoughts and things that they may have? Or are sports actually maybe to end up being something that does bind a whole community together, that fans and players and employees and officials and whole communities can actually learn those lessons, embody those themes, try out those values, not just about what color shirt do you wear and is that good or not, but what does it really mean to be a Buckeye, to be a Cavaliers fan, to be a whatever it might be for you? Most people have ideas and values of what that means and how they're supposed to live it out, and whether or not people follow it with maybe their off-field behavior or whether they cheat or not on the field, what type of player and person that they are, right? We set those lines because we want those values to be important. And it's even more true of faith than it is of sports. Is faith about the building, about the rituals, about the things that we say, the songs that we sing, the styles that we do? Kind of. It helps bond us together, but we know that ultimately our faith is about the values that God gives us that we can live out to transform our lives, to be better and wholer and healthier people, and also make the world that way at the same time. We know that right now it's a big thing to be tribal. We see that all the time on social media, on the news, in the way that people talk to each other. And it's not in those good ways that we've talked about where people are bonding together. A lot of times it's, let me stake my claim and say, who's with me, who's against me, and all the ways that I dislike the people against me, and all the ways that I can just try to show that my team is the best, whether or not we're actually embodying the values that we say are most important to us. I just want to win. I just want to get other people. I just want to make them feel bad or stupid or self-conscious or weak or whatever it might be. We know that that's the culture that we're swimming in. But our ultimate example is Jesus and how we live out our faith and how we see the values actually being rubber meets the road. And Jesus gathered followers from all the different camps of his culture at the time. He had people who were tax collectors and so had worked really closely with the Roman Empire. He had people who were zealots and so wanted to kill all the people in the Roman Empire. He had people who were Pharisees and wanted to follow all the rules. He had people who were Essenes and so just wanted to get out of town and meet God by getting away from all the pressure of life and the rat race and thinking that you had to only follow all the rules. And somehow, Jesus saw, you all want to be people of God in a family of faith. You have all these different ideas of what actions and strategies you're supposed to take to get there. But how about we start with being that family all together, worrying less about our strategies and less about our labels and less about our names and less about, you know, what we think makes us look the best to God, and actually just live as the people of God and see what transformation comes from that. And even just that bonding of all those people together was itself amazingly transformational. I'd hope that that's something that we as Christians could in particular continue to say, what it looks like to be a tribe, why we form rituals, what we work hard to do, even when it's uncomfortable, even when it's hard, even when we might get attacked for it. That type of community those types of values and living it out on behalf of other people who need to be heard, who need to be included when they're excluded, who need to have justice brought into their lives, that we can be part of doing that, and actually from a diversity of perspectives, because we care most about living as a family of God. One of the things Jesus did over and over again was when people made it seem like they got a right answer, that sort of put them up the pecking order with God, like, I know the answer to this story, I know what that parable means, I know I should call Jesus the Messiah or whatever. Jesus would say, okay, great, but actually don't tell anyone about it right now. Just go and live. Don't display, don't advertise, embody first. And that's how the transformation will happen. That's how you'll show me that you really get it. And I think that's a great encouragement for all of us. And I hope that as you go into your lives this weekend, this week, through the fall, as we know there's going to be more and more things to have controversy and question about and potentially divide up into tribes, that whether it's something like, I love gathering people all together of all different walks of life and experiences and perspectives to at least have some bonding together around something in my faith or around watching a game on TV together, that's a wonderful way to live out a value. If it's listening to people that you want to argue with and shout down and say that they don't possibly have anything valuable to say, and doing that before you try to say all of your things to show that you're the best, that's a wonderful way to live out that value. And I'm sure that all of you will think of more and more. But don't be afraid of your tribe. Don't be afraid of finding those rituals. Let's celebrate our ability to have some of those rituals back together starting next week. But let's make sure we always have the ultimate meaning, the ultimate value of the way that God is in the world, driving us forward in everything we do, and being willing to strive for it, even if it means working hard and doing difficult things. So that's all for our sermon this morning, or this afternoon. Who knows when you'll watch it. I hope that you will, in fact, comment on the sermon. Send me an email. If you have questions about, can you tell me more about any of those stories that you shared? Can you clarify what it is that you're getting at with this? Can you tell us more background about the Exodus or about Paul writing to Timothy? Whatever it might be, ask those questions. Even better, if you have stories about, this is what fandom has meant to me and how it formed me as an amazing person with good character, or this is what participating in a sport helped me understand about striving and living a good life, I'd love to hear those stories. Any of those types of things that help us connect to this passage and help us connect to each other, how we're all trying to strive for this in our lives, be really beautiful to be able to share together on Sunday morning. Please comment under this Facebook post. Please send me emails, and we'll make sure to share it on Sunday. Grace and peace, everyone. Go with God, knowing that you can live out that value, even if it seems difficult sometimes.